where marriage is made and love lasts. Welcome to Marriage Unhindered with Doug Hinderer. Relationship problems? No problem. Give us a call, 888-914-9149. Need a second opinion? That's 888-914-9149. This is Marriage Unhindered. Here's your host, Doug Hinderer.
Good morning. Welcome to Marriage Unhindered, the show designed to help you live married life as God intended it, and to give you some help on that journey, you know, to help you navigate those speed bumps and those potholes of life. Bottom line, you know, we're here to help you sanctify your marriage, and that's the idea, right? How do we sanctify our lives? And certainly marriage is a big part of our life, and how do we use that marriage to grow in holiness here in the world? And marriage does not have to be perfect to be wonderful. So this show is about education. It's not about therapy. And sometimes we get into some heavy issues that we may not be able to fully explore and answer here. And sometimes folks' challenges are just too complex to heal on your own. So I encourage you to get help for the serious situations. There's wonderful science out there on how to heal marriages, and there's wonderful faith-filled therapists who can help you on that journey. This show is under the protection of our Blessed Mother under the title of Undoer of Knots, and we always begin with a prayer to her. So if you will join me, please, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Blessed Mother, take into your hands the knots that affect married couples, and with your long fingers of love and grace, undo these knots for the glory of God. Visit married couples with your grace, renew their sacramental covenant, increase God's love in them, and strengthen their bond of peace so that with their children, they may always rejoice in the gift of your blessing. Amen. So I thought today we could talk about the conflicts that couples have when it comes to parenting issues and raising children. You know, children are such a blessing to marriage, of course, but they are also often a source of conflict between husband and wife, especially where rules and discipline are concerned. So I think we're going to talk about three specific points today, hopefully. First is, you know, how to avoid conflict in the first place, right? How to get aligned in terms of parenting so we don't have too many conflicts around that. Number two, how to manage the conflict when it arises, because there will be disagreements about what's the right thing to do with the children as things pop up. And then three, some general guidelines for raising children. So do you, you know, that's what we're going to talk about. So do you and your spouse argue over the children? Most likely, give me a call. We'll help you figure out what's going on there. Do your kids know which one of you is the softy? And do they play one against the other? Well, we'll talk about that. Do you hesitate to discipline your children for fear they won't like you? That's powerful, right? Well, I have some thoughts to share about that as well. Taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Email me if you'd prefer at doug@marriageunhindered.com. And also, don't forget about the marriageunhindered.com website, where you can access podcasts from previous shows and my marriage tune-up workshop to help you and your spouse kind of, you know, breathe some new life into your marriage. I think it's a pretty powerful little help out there, all right? So with me today in the studio is arguably the second best therapist in Illinois, my daughter Monica, who's licensed therapist in Illinois. Monica does a lot of work with teenagers and their parents, kind of helping them navigate those relationships. So I thought her insights would be really valuable on this topic. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine. Nice to see you this
morning. It's good to be in the studio.
Kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun.
It's cool. All right. Listen, I mean, you know, our church has always taught that one of the primary purposes of marriage is the begetting and the educating of children. But, we should not confuse this idea of educating children with teaching them how to read and write. I don't think that's what the church is talking about. Church is talking about, you know, educating children about God and about virtue, about how to live a godly life, to teach them how to be holy men and women in the world. To say it differently, perhaps, is to teach them how to love, right? And so I think there's a few things that are important in this regard. In terms of getting out ahead of the curve, anticipating what's happening, and so you can avoid some of the conflicts with your spouse, I think there's three things important. And the first one is, you know, determine the end and keep it in sight, all right? And to that, I mean, I asked the question, what what do you want your child to look like when he or she is 25 years old? And I think 25 is the good, I mean, that's the age where maturity, I think, really kicks in. We've got the longest, you know, period of immaturity, I think, in the history of the world, right?
Delayed 25. Adolescence.
Yeah, delayed adolescence, that's the word. So, you know, what do you want it to look like? What do you want that child to look like, right? And if you don't know what you want this child to look like as an adult, your parenting then becomes reactive. You just respond to whatever they do or don't do, and then it's arguments and stuff. And you're not parenting in a proactive way. And I think proactive parenting is a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to consider that you're raising adults and that the goal is that they're happy, healthy, functioning, contributing members of society, both here on earth and in heaven one day. And so it's helpful to know the destination to give us better direction in how to get there, better direction in how to even handle conflict with them. Or, you know, picking your battles. How do I know what to do if I don't know where I'm going?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's that old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there, right? And a lot of times we just don't know that. And I think one of the ways you can kind of determine the end in sight is to list out the virtues that you want your child to possess as an adult, right?
I like that you say virtues because I think sometimes parents consider or they dream about who their child will be. And there are things like doctor or lawyer or this kind of like athlete and such. And if we really focus on the virtues, we're able to help our child fully flourish in their own unique identity instead of who we want them to become. Yeah. And so if you prioritize, let's say, honesty, right? Your child can be honest as a lawyer, as a sports player, as a parent, and you're helping them become who God wants them to be, not who you want them to be.
Yeah, right. So whatever they end up being as an, you know, for a profession, you want them to be an honest person, right? In how they go about doing their thing. And I think, I think that's a good conversation on date night for the two of you to have. And then I think you come up with the list and obviously all of the virtues are important. We'll talk about a couple that I think are particularly important to inculcate into young children. But I think you share the list with your children as well. They need to know what it is that you desire for them, that you hope for them. And I think it's a great conversation. Especially when they get into trouble, right? When they screw up, they do something wrong, right? To be able to sit down with them and say, hey, this is not how I see you. I mean, I see you as a young man of absolute honesty, right? Who always does the right thing, even when it's difficult, and especially when it's difficult, which is why I'm so disappointed that you cheated on that test. Because you're an honest person, and this isn't how an honest person will act.
Yeah, and I like that you focus the language in a positive way, right? We're saying, we're speaking to who and what we want them to be, not the mistake they made. So I know that you're honest, instead of saying, you're a liar, you're a cheater, right? So we're saying, I know you're honest, I know you're good. And that also then leaves room to make them feel capable of achieving those virtues, right? We want to empower them to believe that they already have it within them to be that honest person of character. Right. Yeah. And then that leaves room for a further conversation to say, I know that you're an honest person. I know you have this in you. What happened?
Yeah, right. Yeah, what happened? Why did cheating seem like the right thing to do this time, right? What was going on? Yeah. And it's really clear to me, and I'm raising 9 children, and then all the work, I do as a therapist too. I mean, children grow into your expectation of them. And if you have high expectations of the quality of person that they'll be, you're going to produce confident adults. And if you've got low expectations, you're going to produce, adults with low self-esteem who don't feel good about themselves. And, which is why name calling is so harmful, I think, and negative labeling so harmful in children. Calling, children dumb or stupid or a loser, it just really puts that picture in their mind. Then I guess I do get things wrong more often than not. I guess I have to go through my entire adulthood messing up and doing things wrong because from the time I was young, I was told I was a loser,
Kids are motivated by pleasing and play. So they really want to please their parents and the people in authority. And they also like playing, right? It's kind of like they enjoy that quality time with their parents. Yeah. And so we want to be careful of when we express or show perhaps like displeasure with our kids and the impact, the heavy weight that carries on them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I like the idea about play. I mean, that's the reason I had so many children, because I got to keep playing every time. You know, I mean, I was first snowfall. I was the first kid out the door with the sled, and the other kids had to follow behind. So.
Yeah.
So I think that's true. So I mean, a couple of virtues here that I think are really pretty important. And first is fortitude, right? Which is fortitude is the moral virtue that ensures firmness in difficulties and constancy in the pursuit of good, right? It strengthens, you know, the resolve to resist temptations, to overcome obstacles in the moral life and in secular life. You know, the virtue of fortitude enables a person to overcome their fears, you know, and get on with the trials of life and to apply themselves and to work hard, right, to overcome laziness. And fortitude, I think, is just such a critical virtue in our world. Nothing good comes without a cost. Mm. Everything of value has a price tag to it, and that price tag so often is just hard work, just doggedly getting after it.
Yeah. In psychology, or kind of secular society, is going to call this resilience. And I think that this is probably, aside from a well-formed conscience, the second best thing you can give your child, a well-formed conscience and resilience, to know that no matter what I've done, I can get back up and return and keep going. And this is, you know, the virtue of fortitude, instilling this in them is going to set them up for success in life.
I agree. I agree. Because nobody bats 1,000, right? Mm-hmm. In the business world, in your professional world, you're going to get knocked down. It's not going to work right. You're going to fail at times. And the ability to get back up. And I spent 36 years in the corporate world before I started doing this work. And those people who had successful careers were very resilient. They bounced back. They didn't always get the promotion. They didn't always get the sale. Mm-hmm. They were able to keep getting back up, even though things didn't always work out. Well, it's just so critical. Critical in the spiritual life as well. There's times we feel dry and we don't want to pray. Well, pray anyway, even if you feel dry, right? I don't feel like going to Mass. Too bad. You got to rise above your feelings, do the right thing, work hard at it.
Well, and in fact, teaching them that actually the most meaningful things are the things worth struggling at, right? And kind of staying the course and continuing to try, particularly marriage, right? I mean, you have to return again and again in your marriage if you're going to make it work.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because no one is perfectly happily married every minute of every day in their marriage.
Nice?
Yeah, it'd be nice, but it'd be also, I think, kind of boring too. Jeez. So, but marriage is successful to the degree that you kind of keep getting back up every day and say, okay, as your mother tends to say, the challenge with marriage is you've got two imperfect people trying to love perfectly. Mm. And sometimes our imperfections hurt each other, and that's not, but you got to get back up next again and say, well, okay, I'm done with this marriage because, I'm back at it,
One of the things I was going to say is your example in that, since today is about parenting, your example in that is in fact what teaches your child. Your children are more likely, they learn more through your modeling, through your behavior. Yeah. And so they're going to learn fortitude, not through you teaching them this is what the virtue means and this is how we apply it, but through you living it, through you living this virtue, through that example in your marriage, that they see that this is capable and possible because they've seen, you know, daily examples of you trying again.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, right, and they see the fact that mom and dad don't always get along. Sometimes they get upset with each other. Sometimes they get angry, and yet they still love each other. And dad goes off and buys some flowers and brings them home for mom, or mom, you know, cooks a special meal for dad because I still love you even though you made me angry or you hurt me or whatever, right? And so they learn how to bounce back. And that's one of the reasons why I think, it's not the only way, but I think sports is very helpful in this regard when you're raising children, especially young ones. And I particularly like baseball because in baseball you fail a lot more than you succeed because you strike out. Well, it's slow. But, you know, you don't get a hit. You don't get a home run every time, right? You strike out. What are you going to do? Go back to the dugout and cry? No, get out in the field. You're going to get another shot at it. Get back out there, right? So baseball really teaches you, I think, to overcome adversity and failure. I'm a big fan of that, which is why I encourage all you guys to play Little League. But but soccer, I guess, too. You know, you all played soccer. And, not every ball you kick goes in the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Or as a goalkeeper, which you were, not every shot you try to stop.
Everything.
You don't save everything.
It's true.
All right, so that's worth it. I think prudence. I think prudence is another big one to start young with our children, and that's the virtue that disposes practical reasoning to discern our true good in every circumstance and choose the right means of achieving it. Right, you know, the prudent person looks where they're going. Mm-hmm. Right, they think about it. They look ahead. They're practical, right? And they come up with a plan and they execute the plan, right? It's about good decision making.
Yeah. In psychology, they call it the wise mind. And I always love when psychology tries to take things the Catholic Church has already been doing, right? And they just rebrand it. But essentially, this is the balance between the emotions and the intellect, right? The logic. Yeah. And that both are actually really important in making decisions. And it's really important to teach your children this skill, right? Yeah. Not to ignore my emotions or, you know, the realities of, you know, my experiences and my body, but also can I take that into consideration with the logic, with the intellect, and make a free and good choice?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. So teach our children how to actually think, right? And not be a prisoner of their emotions. And rise above the emotions, it's tough. It really is tough. And young children, I mean, you know, this is the work of a lifetime, right? And you see, especially newborns, they realize when they get upset and they start crying, something good happens, right? I get fed, I get nursed, whatever, someone pays attention to me. So right from the start, they realize that emotions are very powerful things. Mm-hmm. So to learn to overcome that, self-soothe, right? It's an important thing. And the last one I would just throw out on the whole list, I think that's important to start very young with, is the virtue of chastity, which is the virtue that brings the sexual appetite into harmony with reason. Yep. And we live in a sex-saturated world where the value, the meaning, the holiness of the marital union is it's just non-existent, right? And it's just all the value's been sucked out of it. And our kids are going to grow up in this very secularized world that looks at physical intimacy as just a toy, something to be played with, something it's very casual. And we need to really help them understand the beautiful nature of it, the way God intended the love between a man and a woman within marriage. So chastity is a really critical virtue, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. I think that one of the things that's important to consider in parenting is that it's easier to be positive and proactive and negative and reactive.
Yeah.
So it's easier to start young and teaching your child the beauty and dignity of their body and of their worth instead of suddenly them becoming teenagers and posting pictures online or running around with different friends. And now you're playing catch up and you're like, oh, snap.
Right.
I have to like try to explain why that wasn't a good idea to post that picture or to be, you know, participating in particular behaviors with other people.
Or running into sites on the internet they shouldn't be at. Mm-hmm. And now you're playing catch up because now they've already been exposed. And now you got to go back and say, yeah, but that's bad. Well, if they know ahead of time the dignity and the beauty of the body, they're going to, when they get exposed to the tawdry side of that, they're going to say, oh, no, that's bad. I don't want to look at that. That's really not good because we've done a good job from the start. So. Yeah. All right, listen, we're talking about the conflict in marriages as it relates to raising children and with my daughter, ACE therapist, Monica. And we talked about determining the end, keep it in sight. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to get aligned in that and then how to educate in love through example. Taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Be back in a minute. Truth, it is amazing how fast time goes by. And you know, when it comes to raising kids, there are no do-overs. It's not like the kid all of a sudden turns 18. You're like, oh man, kid, you do not have your act together. We're going to go back to 12. You were pretty cool at 12. Something went wrong at 13. Let's go back and fix that. So you only got one shot at it. You got to get it right because before you know it, they're 18. They're off to college. And man, then you got this short window. And so we're talking about, you know, how to handle conflict when it comes up. In the marriage over how to discipline the kids. So the first point we're talking about is, you know, determine the end, keep it in sight, right? What do you want this child to look like when they're 25, second point we want to go to now is alignment, right? So you got to get agreement on how you're going to get there. So once you've come up with the virtues that are important, what we want this child to look like, now some agreement on how you're going to get there, right? And that's tough, right? There's a lot of room for disagreement in this. You know, generally dads take a stronger approach, you know, you got to ground the kid for like 12 years and mom takes a softer approach, said, no, let's just give him a hug and let him go, right? It's like, well, somewhere in between grounded for the rest of your life and a hug, there's the right thing to do, so.
I would say this is probably the number one issue, per se, when parents come to see me at work.
Is that right?
Is that they are misaligned. Like, generally, they may both agree that whatever is happening with their kiddo or their adult child is not good, but the approach or the interpretation of what's going on is vastly different. And so, you know, they're coming to therapy or they're seeking kind of some consultation on what are we doing and why is this not working? And getting on the same page is one of the most important steps.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think one of the things that shows up in my office when I'm working with couples is they're fighting about the fact that one of them doesn't support the other in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. The one is leveling some discipline and the other shows up and says, no, we're not doing that. Mm. No, you're not grounded for that long or whatever. And it's like, you don't have my back when I'm actually in the interaction with the child. And so now I'm feeling undermined and the child, now I feel like I don't have much authority with the kid because you just come in and overruled me on what I was doing, right? And so really important, I think, to have this united front in at the moment of discipline. And if you disagree, that's okay. Have that conversation later, right? So, you know, if I've told this child, they're grounded to the room for a week, all right, well, go to your room. Your dad said, go to your room. You're there. Then later have the conversation and say, well, maybe a week's too much. Maybe we could just, and you say, okay, well, then we go back in and talk to the kid and say, I've thought about it and a week might be a little bit too long. So
yeah, I think that to be aligned doesn't mean that you have to be the same. Okay. So you don't have to have the same approach or the same perspective even, but can I accept what my spouse brings to the table in regards to this issue that we're experiencing with our child? And can I find a way to appreciate that perspective? Can I meet them where they're at? I may not want to apply that approach myself, but can I kind of get on board with the fact that there are many paths to the same destination? Yeah. They may choose one path, I may choose another. And it's not necessarily that one is right or one is wrong. It's that we have different approaches and that's okay.
And that's okay. Yeah, having a different approach is okay. And if dad's a little bit tougher than mom, that's okay too, right? I mean, but this is where the alignment is so important that, you know, it's okay for you to be kind of tough and it's okay for me to be kind of soft and however that goes. So listen, we've got a call. Let's go out to Berkeley, California to Matthew. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning. So I just wanted to comment. I came on and called sort of spontaneously.
Great.
But I enjoyed the conversation, and I just got out of Mass and reconciliation. So I was prompted by the Holy Spirit, I'm sure. Great. But so my daughter, you know, I've raised, unfortunately, there's been a separation and a divorce. Currently going through the annulment process. But she's been very good. She was homeschooled last year after 9 years of, 9 years of public school and 1 year at a local Catholic school. She's going to return to that Catholic school next year. So prayers are welcomed. A lot going on in this local Catholic school too, but I won't get into that in depth here. I'm sure we have a limited amount of time,
right.
But my, my daughter has really done a really good job trying to live a chaste life. I've had struggles with that my whole life, but I'm working late in life to receive the grace to have that corrected.
Great.
And you know, I'm trying to keep her from going down that road to perdition. And she's been doing an amazing job early on. She was exposed to some stuff on her cell phone when she first got one at a relatively young age. I don't recommend children getting from that experience that.
Agreed.
I still think maybe the temptation, but she says she's been clear of all of that for years. So, but there's still so much if she has that in her hand that I can't supervise when I'm not around, even whether it's on from her laptop or her cell phone. And So I don't know. I guess the bottom line is I'm having this repeated revelation that it's just not good for children to have too much exposure to the internet and freedom without being supervised.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I mean, the internet unsupervised for children is just an unbelievable invitation for all kinds of, mm-hmm. of trouble. There's just no doubt about that. It sounds like you and your wife are doing a pretty good job of co-parenting. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, I've got somebody that's helping me here. And my former wife, still my wife in the church, Tenora Nolte, I think she became a Seventh-day Adventist, but after the separation, sadly. But she's in you know, prayer and surrounded by prayer, and I think that she'll support whatever, being that I'm raising her, I think is best. Mm-hmm. I think she would support it too. She's, you know, but it's a long story, but we're Bay Area, San Francisco people. So we're liberated, but yeah. You know, I've obviously seen where that goes if you get too liberated. So we're trying to keep our kids from going down that road.
Sure. Well, so Matthew, I would say that it's important to kind of recognize your own feelings, right, of discomfort in giving her this freedom, even though it seems as though she's exercising it well, which is the goal. So regardless of does she have the phone or social media or not, we want our children to experience freedom while they're still in our home, and then to be able to encourage them to use that freedom well so that they are really emboldened, empowered in their own ability to live these virtues, even when it's difficult. And so I think this is a really great exercise and that opportunity. And often parents tend to, in my experience and in my practice, restrict some freedom because of their personal discomfort, right? Their fear and related to what could happen. And one of the things we want to be careful about is not restricting too much or letting fear guide us too much, because we want our children to learn very well while they're in our homes.
Yeah. You want to give them the freedom that's proportionate to their maturity, mm-hmm. to kind of makes these decisions. I think when it comes to phones, I mean, any kind of screen, some good rules of thumb is, you know, no screens, no devices in the bedrooms, mm-hmm. no devices behind closed doors, right? You know, if you've got a laptop or whatever, a tablet for homework, good, but let's do your homework at the dining room table, kitchen table, that kind of thing. So we want to make it easy for our children to make good choices and help them form these good virtues like mm-hmm. fortitude, et cetera, and chastity, so that when they're on their own, they make good choices.
Yeah.
Matthew, thanks so much for the call, and keep up the good work with your daughter. She's blessed to have you in her life. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Monica, so that's alignment. Let's talk a little bit about educating in love through example, right? And I think expressions of love and happiness between husband and wife are really very important. And children need good role models of how husbands treat wives and how wives treat husbands. And I think that's a real issue in today's world because, you know, half of all children are grown up in single-parent homes now. Mm-hmm. So they're really not seeing what love looks like mm-hmm. between a husband and a wife. And I think, you know, our kids' first exposure to what those relationships look like happen in the home. And mm-hmm. so it's really important, I think, for us parents to do a good job of loving each other, you know, publicly, mm-hmm. right? Hugging each other playfully, tickling, loving, hugging, bantering back and forth with laughter, I think is a really important thing.
Yeah. You are your child's first understanding of the world and of relationships. And so kind of echoing what we said earlier in that it's easier to be positive and proactive if they see a happy and loving relationship, if they see conflict with repair, if they see tenderness and kindness. Yeah. It's going to be more obvious when they get into the real world and away from home, when there are relationships or people or spaces that are not those things.
Yeah.
And they're going to be able to say, like, gosh, that's not how I grew up, right? Or that's just, it feels off. I don't like this, because they're able to see your example first.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the work I do is kind of fun, where one of the, either husband or wife, doesn't matter which, but they grew up in a home where there was no yelling, no shouting, a lot of respect. And then they married into a family where there was a lot of yelling and a lot of loud voices. And, you know, they come to these large families where that's just kind of normal. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they get overwhelmed by it, because they grew up in a very low-keyed, soft home. And so yeah, it's just, it kind of sets the tempo. And so I think it's really friendship. Friendships develop in the home, I think, really well, or they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so to help our kids have their siblings to be their friends, where they get along and enjoy each other and see mom and dad as friends as well, and how that goes. So, and then kindness and gentleness, right? To show that kindness and gentleness is how we're going to treat each mm-hmm. other. And when we get it wrong, we're going to apologize mm-hmm. and we're going to make up, you know, if we said something harshly or disrespectfully or treated someone rudely, we're going to apologize for that and mm-hmm. and ask for forgiveness.
Yeah. So the tenets of a healthy marriage, we could say, are in some ways tenets for healthy relationships. And so you have a relationship with your child.
Yeah.
And can I turn towards them, right? When your child makes bids, can I show them that love of friendship and kindness? Yeah. And part of this is helping modeling through action that type of relationship with your child.
Yeah, yeah, right. I agree. And you used the phrase earlier, conflict and repair. I think mm-hmm. you said repair. And I think it's so important for these kids to know that, yeah, mom and dad have conflicts. We can have conflict. We repair the damage as well after mm-hmm. the fact because we love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing wrong with conflict. There's something wrong if we treat each other poorly. And then we have to repair that damage after the fact.
And repairing the relationship with your child when you have conflict with your child, it's really important for parents to be able to own and acknowledge when they made mistakes with their children and say, you know what? I didn't mean to say X, Y, Z.
Right, right.
And I am sorry. What I intended to say was this.
I love that. And I think it's perfectly okay. And not only okay, but a really good idea for parents to apologize to their kids when they get it wrong.
Yeah.
So whereas mom and dad aren't perfect. And when they do something wrong, they own it mm-hmm. and they try to repair the damage.
I saw this interesting study recently that was kind of highlighting the fact that if parents never do this, if they never apologize or repair, your child grows up thinking that authority is infallible. And that's a dangerous thing to teach your kids, that anyone in a position of power or authority is always right.
Yeah, right. Like your boss,
yes.
like the coach on the team mm-hmm, or whatever mm-hmm. can lead to some bad choices.
Yeah, exactly. And so that it's actually healthy for us to show that as a person, as an authority figure in your child's life, I can make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that what it also models is that it's okay for them to make mistakes, because what your young child is doing is they're and rightfully so, kind of idolizing you. And they should. It's an important stage of development for them to be like, my dad is Superman. And, you know, my mom's the smartest person in the world. And that's so important to their development. And they see themselves in you.
Yeah.
So they also need to be able to see that I can make mistakes and that's okay. I can apologize and that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Let's take another call. Let's go out to Newark, New Jersey, and James. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Love your show.
Thank you.
Regarding sports and the value of sports, this is my own perspective. I think that parents have a role to play because some coaches may or may not teach the following, which I think are important lessons. One is how to lose gracefully,
mm-hmm.
both as an individual and as a team. Secondly, how to participate gracefully when I'm not the star. What if I'm the third string or second string? Are those kids really taught the value of their inherent contribution?
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, what about sports as a value to teach about work-life balance? We talk about this a lot as adults, work-life balance. Well, what about the kid who has to play in a big championship game on a Sunday and then take a calculus test the next day?
Yeah.
How does that, is that kid really being taught, you know what, they're both important, and maybe the calculus test is even more important. How do they do that work-life balance?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
I think that's great. And I think, you know, so many of these traveling teams, they have tournaments and big games on Sunday mornings. How do you get to church, right? And we kind of, we always kind of drew a line that said, we're not missing Mass for any reason on the earth, period. We're not doing that.
Yeah, I think it's important. And James, you sort of speak to this idea that sports can teach character. They can, right? They have the potential to do this as long as coaches and kind of these supporting roles are encouraging those. It can also teach us to be overcommitted. A lot of kids now are overcommitted in their extracurricular activities because parents don't want them to miss opportunities, or their sports team requires them to practice 3 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's too much sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think, right. And this is where that alignment thing is so important in setting up the values. Why is your child playing sports? Probably not to gain the skills so they can make a living as an athlete someday. That's pretty rare, right? So why else am I playing sports? Well, to learn certain virtues. And as you said, James, to learn how to lose gracefully, participate gracefully, be a good team player, even if you're not the star, encourage other people. A lot of great virtues can be learned on the sports field.
This circles back to what we were saying earlier, is that parents are the primary educators.
Yeah.
So you have to still be involved with the coach, with the teacher, reinforcing certain...
Is your child playing sports?
Reinforcing, you know, skills.
Yeah. James, thanks so much for the call. I agree with you 100%. And all parents out there, help your children develop virtues through the sports they're playing, whether they're the star or they're the ones pulling up the rear guard, for sure. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll keep going about how to resolve conflicts in your marriage on parenting issues. Taking your calls, 888-914-9149. Be back in a minute. Have those virtues, humbleness and kindness, and this is the person I see you as, humble and kind and honest and someone who doesn't cheat, etc. Beautiful. That's the idea. We're talking about conflict in marriage over parenting issues, and we talked a little bit about the importance of keeping the end in mind. What do you want this child to look like as an adult? We're raising adults here, not children. Alignment, right? Getting husband and wife aligned on how you're going to actually go about doing that. And then how to educate them through the example of the love that you share in your marriage. And that's really critical. I'm here with my daughter, ACE therapist, Monica Hinderer at Marriage Unhindered. We're taking your calls at 888-914-9149 or drop me an email at... Doug@marriageunhindered.com. We did get an email, and I kind of would like to talk about this for a second, and then I want to make sure we have time at the end to talk about how to resolve conflicts in your marriage. So this comes from Gary. I listen to your show every week. My wife and I have been married 14 years, second marriage after the death of former spouse. But we've been separated for the past 6 months now due to problems with trying to raise our 16-year-old grandson. Together, we could not give him everything he needed. 70-year-old grandparents trying to be parents in today's world did not work. For the past 6 months, my wife has been trying to do the impossible by doing this on her own. This is not going well. We're still very much in love and trying to figure this out. Can you talk to this situation? I and probably others could learn some things. I don't recommend godparents or grandparents doing this. Value your advice. So obviously, you know, Monica, this must be a very troubled young man, right?
Yeah.
Why is... grandma raising a 16-year-old must come from a pretty troubled home life.
Something's going on.
Neither mom or dad are involved in this, which suggests that there's probably some behavioral things with the 16-year-old acting out. You know, that would be the thing. And so all of a sudden now this burden has fallen to grandmother, who's trying to do what's right by this kid. But that's messed up her marriage now to her husband. Mm. 14 years and now they've separated. So, this is a tough one. I'd have some questions, you know, like what's the conflict between husband and wife, What's going on there, right?
And what's going on with the kid?
Right? What's going on with the kid? How is he acting out? Mm-hmm. And obviously the two of you must be in a disagreement about how to handle his acting out.
Which happens so often on, you know, the day-to-day basis with the small things with kids, but we're seeing now more and more severe mental health issues in our children, behavioral problems, substance use, all of this. And so there's a really big divide, right? I think the email speaks to this generational gap, right? Where kind of an old way or of kind of parenting isn't applicable to this kid.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think part of it would be somewhat getting help, but a lot of the married couples that I work with on these issues, it's really important to remind them that your first and primary vocation is your spouse.
Yeah.
And that often children take priority, and that in some ways that is kind of a, trying to find a gentle way to say, you're misprioritizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that your marriage comes first and foremost, that you took a vow to your spouse, right? We promised God to raise our children in our faith. We vowed a lot of things to, for our spouse.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. Jesus was pretty clear about that, right? Until death do us part. And which is why husband leaves father and mother and clings to his wife, you know, and the two become one. This is a trickier situation because they're getting married later in life, right? And this 16-year-old was 2 years old at the time these two got married, so he's been around from the beginning. And so, I mean, I guess what I'd say is a couple things. A, this is probably happening, but it was not that that young man needs to be in therapy. He needs to be getting some professional help to deal with whatever's going on with him. Number two, I think you and your wife need to get into some counseling as well to figure out what's going on, right? Which of you isn't bending? Which of you isn't flexible? Which of you is saying, you know, that that we can't do this together? Well, why not? What's what's stopping the two of you from doing this together? And maybe if you get some help with a good marriage therapist, you can work through those issues and get back to doing this thing together and get your marriage back together.
Often I think what happens is that issues or problems become all-consuming. And so we have stopped at times. I'm not saying this is what has happened because it's just an email, but at times we stop tending and nurturing our marriage because the problem, the kid becomes the problem, the home becomes the problem, the marriage becomes the problem, and we're all consumed by whatever this 16, 17-year-old is doing.
Right.
And part of it is turning towards our spouse again.
Yeah, I agree. And you're in that a lot of times with, and it doesn't even have to be large families, but often large family, there's one black sheep in the family. There's one kid who is sucking all of the energy out of the home. And for whatever reason is just rebellious and uncooperative and combative and just is going to disrupt all the peace and harmony of one child. And that kid sucks all the oxygen, cause all kinds of problems. And sometimes you got to be able to prioritize, say, you know what, kid, this, you need to figure this out. But You can't be here. So, all right. So good. Thank you for that email. It's a tough, tough situation. Before we're done, I want to spend a little bit of time just talking about how to actually handle the conflicts when you both disagree about what's the right thing. You're aligned on the goal, you're aligned on what the kidneys look like, but all of a sudden something happens and you disagree on what the right response is to that. I think the two thoughts I'll share. I think the first most important is understand your spouse's perspective. Have a spirit of curiosity. Before you say you were wrong to yell at that kid, find out why they yelled. Like, what was going on? Because normally you don't yell at your, at our children, right? So you must have been really upset. Help me understand what was going on in your world, right? That you kind of lost it and really said those kind of those harsh things. So ask questions for deeper understanding before you pass judgment that what the person did was wrong, right? And I think another good question is the question, why do you care? And I don't mean that in a flippant way or a sarcastic way. I mean that in a very genuine, serious way. Why do you care that the child didn't make his bed? Why do you care that he didn't fold his laundry and put him in the dresser or hang his shirts up or iron his shirts? Why do you care that the laundry isn't folded? That's a really important question,
I
think.
And I think it's, you can even take that question into the marriage a little bit and ask yourself, why do I care that my spouse yelled? What is it about their reaction that's upsetting me? What is it about the reaction that elicits some fear or concern in me? Because I think that's going to be able to help you with better dialogue with them to say, you shouldn't be yelling versus I'm worried when you yell that the kids are taking it X, Y, Z way.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think the question often or the kind of the journey that I try to take my couples on sometimes is this problem you've got now, this conflict, is it because of a defect in you or a defect in your spouse or a defect in the child, right? So am I angry because there's something the child's doing wrong, right? Again, repeated. Or am I angry because I'm kind of a neat freak, right? I'm a little OCD and I expect my, you know, I expect my 10-year-old's room to be as neat and put together as my room is. Well, that's a defect in me, right? Not a defect in the child. And so that's why, especially in homes where both parents are present, mm-hmm. we get a chance to ask these questions to help, you know, to help me see, wow, I was pretty upset, but is that because there's something wrong with me in this situation, not sure. the kid?
Yeah, what percentage can I own? We can all own at least some percentage of an interaction, a conversation, a discussion, a debate, a fight, whatever it is. What percentage is mine? What do I own? And this is also going to, this is circling back to what we said when we started this show. This is going to help us know, is this reaction, is this fight, is this discipline in line with who I'm trying to help them become? Or is it a reaction because I am uncomfortable?
Yeah.
I am uncomfortable with mess. And so I want to come down on this rule, dot, dot, dot. Or is it, no, this is a really important developmental or virtue stage for them yeah. that I need to address.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So, you know, right. I mean, we give them chores. I mean, one of the things that kids need to have are chores so they mm-hmm. learn responsibility, right? And not because I don't feel like emptying the dishwasher sure. when it's clean. But because they need to be part of the team, mm-hmm. right? You need to contribute, yeah. right? You got fed for free. Well, you can kind of help repay that by at least emptying the dishwasher mm-hmm. or loading it or emptying it or whatever the case yeah. may be, right?
We want them to take pride in their work and in the work of the home and in contributing to the family. This also helps them feel capable and competent. So the task or the chore that we're giving them should be yeah. just a little bit just outside of their kind of comfort zone so that they feel a little bit challenged, but that yep. they can absolutely meet and accomplish this task. And so we want to make sure we're doing that. We also want to make sure that we're giving our kids lots of choices in the day. And we don't just give them vague general choices of you can do anything, but would you rather load the dishwasher or sweep the floor?
Mm.
Right? And we give them yeah. some autonomy and some choice to be able to know what do I enjoy doing that's still helpful, mm-hmm. right? Choosing, making good choices,
yeah.
but contributing.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. I love that. So, yeah, that's the deal. So sometimes we get upset with our kids just because we're impatient. You know,
or yeah.
I'm cranky today. I got a headache today. So, you know, walk on eggshells because, mm-hmm. you know, dad's a little cranky. He's got a hangover this morning, you know, whatever. All right. So I think but understand your spouse's perspective. And oftentimes we react to our spouse's misbehaviors, their crankiness mm-hmm. or their yelling without really understanding where it's coming from, mm-hmm. you know? And then once you understand it, it gives you a chance to affirm your spouse too. And where you could say, well, you know what? It makes sense to me that you would have yelled at that child. With all you've been through today, all the stressors, mm-hmm. this is the sixth time you've asked that kid to, you know, put his shoes away and he hasn't done it. I understand. It makes perfect sense that you yelled at him. Come here, let me give you a hug. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, let's start over here yeah. today and that kind of thing.
Yeah, understanding myself, understanding why I'm reacting to something, understanding my spouse isn't condoning necessarily what they've done, right? Yeah, sometimes right. I think people worry about that. I think they worry about like, well, if I don't correct the behavior or if I choose a more gentle approach or an understanding approach, then I'm saying what they've done is okay. And seeking understanding just gives us a better path forward. It doesn't mean that we don't still correct the behavior.
Exactly. You know, a lot of times when we're with couples, and I'll stop and say, okay, tell me why you think your spouse did that.
Mm.
And they'll come up with something.
Yeah.
And I'll look at the spouse and say, did they get it right?
And they said, no.
Nope. Yeah. Missed it by a mile.
Sure.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, it's not that we're out here trying to unfairly judge our spouse, but we're trying to bring order to our world too, so sure. we can understand what's going on.
Sure.
Well, we get it wrong a lot. So mm-hmm. let's just ask the question.
Yeah.
Help me understand why you did that.
Yeah.
Because I really would like to know.
And you can apply that to your children as well, right? Help me
yes.
understand why the bed wasn't made. Help me understand exactly. this, what was going on. I think what happens often in relationships is that we assume, because there's been a significant amount of time that has passed, that we know this person. And
yeah,
you may
right.
know them very, very well. But to come from a place of assumption that I know exactly why you did what you did, that's not going to benefit you.
No.
Very rarely is that going to work in your favor.
No, it's not. We're not too good at mind reading.
No.
Especially guys. Women are a little bit better at it than we are. All right. And then the second thing is, you know, stay focused on what's best for the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't get sidetracked into discussions, you know, about what's wrong with your spouse. You yell too much or you're too hard or you're too soft, right? Just focus on what's right for the child.
I think that attunement to your child is going to help you parent them a little bit better, right? Because the same approach is not going to be, one approach does not fit all, especially with kids, right? So yelling at one kid may be kind of what gets the message across. Another kid,
yeah.
not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, we had nine kids, and some of them you could hit them with a 2x4 to get their attention, and the others you just saw the 2x4 and they started crying, right? So you needed a different approach with each kid. And that's how having this alignment is so helpful. Mm-hmm. So we're almost out of time, Monica. Before we do that, thank you for being part of the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I really enjoyed this. So how, if people wanted to connect with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, you can just Google my name, Monica Hinderer. It's my website, monicahinderer.com, or you can find me on Instagram at Monica Hinderer LCPC.
Okay, that's great. And you are licensed in Illinois?
I am licensed in Illinois, yes.
Wonderful, great. Well, listen, I remember, everybody, marriage does not have to be perfect to be wonderful. And there's a solution to everything that's hindering your marriage. And you'll find those solutions right here every Saturday at 11 on Marriage Unhindered. And check out the MarriageUnhindered.com website for the past shows and for my Marriage Tune-Up Workshop, which can really kind of help you and your husband get aligned on some things and tune it up, right? Breathe some new life into your marriage. So, real pleasure to be with you today. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I will see you next week. Have a great week, everyone.